a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome to everyone today. We have a pretty full calendar, but I think we'll get all the way through it. I just wanted to announce to those of you, we're going to move Senate Bill 62 to next Tuesday, 27th of January, 2015. With that, I'd like our Paige to come up and introduce herself, please. Thank you, Megan. I appreciate, please, if you have any handouts, hand them to Megan, and she'll make sure that the committee members all receive those. I remind everyone to sign in if you're testifying on any bills today. And a lobbyist, please make sure you're appropriately festooned for a testimony before the committee. I'd ask the secretary to please call the roll.
Senator Haggard?
Here.
Bradford?
Here.
Lederman?
Here.
Sutton?
Here.
Nostrup?
Here.
Greenfield?
Yes.
Curd?
Here. All right. First on the calendar for today, Senate Bill 31. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Come on up. But before we finish that, motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So approved. Anything else I've forgotten, Amanda? Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. With your permission, I'd like to speak to Senate Bill 31 this morning, an act to revise certain provisions regarding coordination of benefits between health plans. My name is Larry Dieter. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance. The Division of Insurance is part of the South Dakota Department of Labor and Regulation. Senate Bill 31 is an update to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, Model Act. This act was updated by the NAIC in 2013. And these changes have not yet been formally adopted by South Dakota. Senate Bill 31 incorporates the NAIC model language into existing state statutes, which currently follow the NAIC model law. In South Dakota, companies are not required to coordinate benefits, but if they choose to do so, they must coordinate them in accordance with how things are laid out in SDCL 58-18A. Section 1 of the bill amends SDCL 5818-58 to add insurance contracts that pay or reimburse for the cost of dental care to the definition of plan. This clarifies that dental plans are subject to coordination. Section 2 amends SDCL 5818-70 to include the coordination of benefits for a dependent child who has coverage under one or both of the parents' plans and adds coverage as a dependent under a spouse's plan. It lays out under that scenario the order of benefits. Again, this bill is simply an update to model language to bring South Dakota up to the standards currently established by NAIC model law. In conclusion, I would ask for your support of this bill, and thank you for your time. And with that, I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Dieter? Any other proponents for Senate Bill 31?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Randy Moses of Era Health Plans. We support this legislation. It's extremely important for the plans and the policyholders to have a consistent way of dealing with whose primary and whose secondary plans an individual has. This gets rid of all the question marks, you know, who's primary, who's secondary, which plans apply, which don't. The other states will no doubt move forward in adopting this model. A lot of the self-funded plans adopt it too. It's really important for consistency purposes, and we'd urge your support. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Moses? Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Drew Duncan representing Dakota Care. We're also supportive of Senate Bill 31 for the reasons given by the department and Mr. Moses, and we'd ask you to support it. Thanks.
Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 31. Closed proponent testimony. Any opponent testimony, Senate Bill 31? Going once. Any opponents, Senate Bill 31? I'll open it up to a committee discussion and or action at this time on Senate Bill 31. Moved to pass by Senator Sutton and seconded by Senator Haggar. Any comments?
Just cleanup, it seems to me, so let's keep moving.
Senator Haggar? Okay. Let's call the vote.
Senator Hagger?
Aye.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Sutton?
Aye.
Knopstrup?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Kurd?
Aye. Looks like all yays. So any further recommendations for Senate Bill 31 as it has passed? I will. There. How about that?
I would move consent. Sorry.
All right. We'll place that on the consent calendar. And by voice vote. Any, all in favor? Consent calendar?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Sam, do you have...
No. I just got a comment from one of the things. I hate bills going on consent. But I like this one.
So noted.
All right. We'll move Senate Bill 31 to the consent calendar. Voice vote of the committee unanimous. We'll move on to the next item of business. Senate Bill 36,
proponent testimony for Senate Bill 36.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here to discuss Senate Bill 36 and ask your permission to proceed. I am Jay Vogt. I'm director of the State Historical Society, which is part of the Department of Tourism. And Senate Bill 36 is one of those red tape task force bills intended to repeal unnecessary statutes and update statutes as appropriate. The four-section bill eliminates three sections of current law, and the fourth cleans up some language. I do have an amendment. The Board of Regents caught a cross-reference that we needed to catch for them. For a cross-reference regarding the Dakota State University Museum.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Greenfield.
For discussion purposes, I would move Amendment 36FA.
Okay, Amendment 36FA, moved by Senator Greenfield, seconded by Senator Sutton. Any further comments on that? And he'll discuss it.
Going back to the entire bill as proposed amendment, the first three sections eliminate laws that are no longer necessary in the code, and the fourth section, and then the addition of the amendment, eliminates the reference to the Smith-Zimmerman State Museum at Dakota State University as part of the state museum system and its affiliation with the Board of Regents. And with that, I have no further comments and ask for your support on the bill as amended.
Did you want to comment on the amendment slightly? Go on. Mr. Vogt?
Well, the amendment basically references Section 135918, and that's being corrected out of there. They just did some cleanup language on how the phraseology of the section.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Vogt? Further proponents for Senate Bill 36? Any opponents for Senate Bill 36? Okay, we'll open the Senate Bill 36 to discussion, comments, and or actions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hagar.
Do pass.
Would you prefer to make a motion that we amend Senate Bill 36 first? You motioned to be said for discussion, so I'd like to know formally if you want it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
36FA, move to amend.
So, FA, Senate Bill 36 with the amended with FA by Senator Hagar, seconded by Senator Lederman. Comments on that motion other than to move it?
No comments.
We'll move Senate Bill 36A as amended. The amendment has been introduced. Is it voice vote, I suppose, for that? Huh? All in favor of 36FA, the amendment?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Okay, 36FA as amended, added to Senate Bill 36, the change. Further comments, discussion, and or motions for Senate Bill 36? Senator Bradford.
I have a comment. Maybe it's a little question, too. And I didn't get time to fully read this amendment, but In the bill on line 10, the director of the Historical Society shall work for free. We took that out. Is that a, does that mean he no longer works, or maybe somebody could tell me that?
I don't know the answer to that, Senator Bradford, but perhaps Mr. Vogt knows the answer, if he'd be willing to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bradford, that section of the law was last amended in 1974, and if you go back and look at the session laws, it does not state what currently states in code, so I don't know how the language that existed is in there now, but what we do follow the same Bureau of Human Resources procedure for salary and wages, because I am a state employee.
It sounds like he's still working, but he's getting paid for it now. That's what I heard him say. Further questions or comments regarding Senate Bill 36 as amended? Senator Sutton.
I would move do pass as amended.
Okay, move do pass as amended by Senator Sutton, seconded by Senator Greenfield. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Hager?
Aye.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Senator Lederman?
Aye.
Senator Sutton?
Aye.
Senator Nostrup?
Aye.
Senator Greenfield?
Aye.
Senator Kurd?
Aye. Senate Bill 36 as amended has passed without any opposition. Any further action, Senate Bill 36 as amended?
Sure.
Senator Lederman?
Move to the consent calendar. Second.
Move to the consent calendar motion by Senator Lederman, seconded by Senator Greenfield. So you have a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll move Senate Bill 36 on this consent calendar. Next on the agenda today, Senate Bill 18, proponent testimony, Senate Bill 18. Mr. Attorney General.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Marty Jackley, South Dakota Attorney General. Senate Bill 18 has a specific design to address some of the charity and raffle problems South Dakota has been recently experiencing. Let me just take a moment and describe what we do under current law. Right now, charities and these raffles are not regulated. We do regulate paid solicitors. What a charity does need to do in nonprofits is just simply register within the Secretary of State's office. It's an easy process. It's a form process. What I am proposing in Senate Bill 18 is to put some minor conditions on to avoid the situation when we've had individuals essentially indicate they're going to hold a raffle or hold a lottery with really no intention of carrying through and not refunding those funds back to the public. I'll go through how I think the solution is, but I think it'd make more sense for me to take just a minute and talk about some of the instances that we have received complaints on. I think overall we're pretty lucky in South Dakota. We have a very giving charities, and that's why I'm not proposing that we significantly regulate charities, because I don't want to hamper a South Dakotan from wanting to give to a legitimate charity that has a legitimate purpose. Between 2009 and 2014, our Consumer Protection Division has received 25 differing raffle complaints. We've been able to essentially resolve most of them for recoveries and back to South Dakota citizens of about $8,460. Of the four examples that I'm giving to you, we have essentially been able to resolve three of the four, but we admittedly have not been too successful on probably the largest one, and that I'll start with. The one instance, we received 18 complaints filed against Preventative Health Strategies. The allegations were that they were essentially selling $1,000 tickets for a land raffle in Moody County that never happened. We have been trying to work with the owners of Preventative Health Strategies for these 18 individuals that gave the $1,000. We have been only able to return $5,000, which essentially means they have $13,000 out there of allegations on a raffle that I can for sure tell you did not happen. The land in Moody County did not exchange hands. We had additional two complaints filed on Backyard Motorcycles, LLC. Backyard was selling $25 tickets to win a motorcycle. I believe they had a legitimate purpose, and that was to Children's Network. It's just an instance when they didn't follow the rules associated with that. The proper organization would have been Children's Miracle Network. They are a nonprofit. But they didn't do that. And so there were 52 tickets sold, and they are in the process of refunding that. This type of charity, I just want you to realize that this is going on, but we're getting the money back. And this isn't something that you would likely prosecute. It's something that can be worked through. Similarly, another example was the Full Throttle Salon or Saloon in the Sturgis area. They, too, were holding $20 tickets to win a motorcycle. They did not register as they're required to with the Secretary of State's office. Obviously, they are not a nonprofit either. We're working with them, and they're willing to return the $2,160 in tickets sold. And then finally, we had an additional situation with the Black Hills Youth Football. They hadn't properly registered. Things were going outside of jurisdictions. But again, we're working through that and solving that. For the instances when we can't work through it and solve it, I am asking you for the criminal ability to address it. And in setting forth those rules, what we are proposing in Senate Bill 18 is very simple. And that is, if you're going to have a raffle, and we encourage you to do this if you're a nonprofit, you have to, within 18 months, complete that process. And if you don't, and there comes a period of time, and there are legitimate reasons when you know you can't hold a raffle. Maybe it's not successful. Problems arise. You may have a criminal theft within your organization, which is not necessarily your fault. We've seen all of that. So it gives you an opportunity. Once you realize that, you have 30 days to give everybody notice that you sold a ticket to that you can get your money back. Some people may not want the money back. They may say, for whatever reason, go ahead and keep it, etc. So after that 30-day notice, the people that bought tickets have 180 days to claim that money back. And if they don't, the money just simply goes back to the Treasury's unclaimed property. And pretty simple, straightforward rules. But if you violate those rules, it's considered a Deceptive Trade Practice Act or Deceptive Act. And what that means is that triggers our criminal jurisdiction and would allow the Attorney General to essentially charge it out. If it's less than, or if it's $1,000 or less, it would be a misdemeanor. If it's over $1,000, it would be a Class 6 felony, which is punishable by up to 2 years in jail. And, of course, we'd get the restitution back for those folks that bought those tickets. And, Mr. Chairman, I certainly would make myself available for any questions you or the committee have at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Any current questions for Mr. Jackley? I have one. The $1,000, is that in the aggregate or on an individual ticket basis?
By other statute, it's in the aggregate. So the example that I gave where there's still $13,000 outstanding, the prosecutors, if we can show a nexus between it, and obviously if it's the same raffle, it's a nexus, it would be aggregated, and so that would trigger the felony prosecution.
Other questions? I have two more. Is this what you're suggesting similar to what might be done in another state when a raffle occurs and there's some controversy that surrounds it? It is also in that state's deceptive practice. Is that how it's addressed?
I would say it would either be, Mr. Chairman, it would either be in the Deceptive Trade Practice Act or treated as a straightforward theft. One of the challenges we have in South Dakota with our general theft statute is there's some Supreme Court interpretation, it's State v. Jackson, that essentially says a prosecutor must prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a unanimous jury that at the time the raffle was to be held, or that the time the tickets were being sold, that there was a fraudulent intent. As you can see, it would be very difficult for a prosecutor to prove what a scammer is thinking at the time. We would have to rely upon essentially their thought process. And so based upon that decision and some other Supreme Court decisions, we don't have the best opportunity under our theft statutes for these type of matters. And that's why it would fit in the Deceptive Act more appropriately. So some states use Deceptive Trade Practice Act. Some states use the theft statute. My suggestion is rather than go in and change all of our theft statutes, that we should just place this, like some states do, in the Deceptive Acts category.
And one final, appears to me that this is not a retroactive act. It's from the date it passes moving forward. So it wouldn't apply to any of the cases that you're currently working with. It would be only on a go-forward basis. That's accurate?
Mr. Chairman, that is accurate. And we, at this time, have not asked for an emergency clause, so it would not take effect until July. We've discussed those matters. There still is, under the right set of circumstances, though, a potential theft violation. You know, if the evidence would prove at the time the ticket was sold that the seller of the ticket had the fraudulent intent to never hold the raffle, that we could still move forward on felony theft charges. And so that is a potential, but obviously there are significant roadblocks and challenges to that.
Mr. Chair. Senator Hagar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Attorney General, maybe you mentioned this in your introductory remarks. I'm wondering if there are many or few who would be past this 18-month time frame mentioned in Section 1. And then after July 1st hits, assuming this passes and it becomes law, they would then have the full could they potentially be charged right away, or would they have that 30 days to refund if they're past the 18 months?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the 18 months would not begin to account until the July 1 passage date. And so my perception would be is that essentially any raffles in the process or occurring prior to July 1 would not be encompassed by this. Anything occurring after July 1 would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering how do you know about when I was coaching the baseball team in Martin, South Dakota, they had a couple of raffles that to send the ball team different places. How do you know about each raffle?
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Senator, technically under the rules, when those occur, you're supposed to register those with the Secretary of State's office 30 days prior to that. There's that registration form. The reality is, the way we know about it is we start receiving complaints. In other words, obviously, if somebody buys a ticket for $1,000 and there's no land raffle, they're not very happy, and they call the Attorney General and say, you know, these are the facts, these are the circumstances, what can you do? What we try to do in all the examples that I went through is we try to work with the consumer and the person holding the raffle and make it right. What I'm asking you is, in instances when we're unable to work through that, to essentially give the Attorney General the power to bring a criminal action and address it through the criminal process and restitution.
Further questions for Mr. Jackley? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Further proponents, Senate Bill 18.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Eric Nelson, the registered lobbyist for AARP South Dakota. I rise before you today on behalf of our nearly 105,000 members across the state of South Dakota, and we offer our support for Senate Bill 18. We applaud and thank the Attorney General for addressing this issue, and thank you for your consideration of the bill this morning. As we all know, seniors, in this case AARP represents the 50-plus population of South Dakota, are highly susceptible to frauds and scams. This legislation will protect seniors and all South Dakotans by ensuring that the monies given by generous South Dakotans go to their intended purposes. Throughout 2014, AARP South Dakota, in partnership with the Attorney General, had a fraud watch network event in all 66 counties in South Dakota, where we went to the county and solicited feedback from our members and anyone in the area about some of the frauds and scams going on in the state. And we have numerous stories of these events of numerous frauds and scams happening in the state. And this is just one step further to provide some protection for our South Dakota seniors. So again, I thank you for your consideration of this bill and ask you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Nelson before he gets too far away? Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 18. Are there any opponents that wish to testify on Senate Bill 18 this morning? Any opponent testimony, Senate Bill 18? With no opponents, do you have any further comments, Mr. Attorney General?
I don't, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
At that point, I'll open it up to the committee for questions, comments, and or action. Senate Bill 18. Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move due pass on Senate Bill 18.
Second.
Senate Bill 18 moved due pass by Senator Greenfield, seconded by Senator Hagar. Comments on your motion, Senator Greenfield?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also like to thank the Attorney General for bringing this bill forward. As I read it, it seemed like a pretty common sense piece of legislation to help right something that is currently wrong. And I guess I would point out that for anybody listening in who hasn't read the bill, once they reach the $100,000 threshold, should they do so, it would become a Class 5 felony rather than Class 6, as was mentioned. I guess really the only concern is that there may be some people up here, I won't say any names, who are funding their campaigns this way, and they won't be able to do that anymore. I'm just kidding. I would encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Greenfield. Any further comments on Senate Bill 18 do pass motion? I just have one, and it echoes the comments that Senator Greenfield made, and that's for all of us that are involved in charitable organizations, please be mindful that it is a state law and a requirement that your raffle is registered with the state. You don't want to find out that it's been registered against your knowledge by a complaint being filed. So perhaps a good reminder for us all that that's a practice that we should employ in our charitable activities. I'd ask the Secretary to please call the vote for Senate Bill 18.
Senator Nostrop?
Aye.
Senator Sutton?
Aye.
Senator Lederman?
Aye.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Senator Hager?
Aye.
Senator Greenfield?
Aye.
Senator Curd?
Aye. Senate Bill 18 has passed unanimously. Any further action on Senate Bill 18? No further action. Senate Bill 18 will move to the floor with a do pass recommendation from Senate Commerce. Thank you, Mr. Attorney General.
Thank you very much.
Next on our calendar, Senate Bill 30, revise the review process for rate and policy form filing denials for insurers. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 30.
Morning again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Larry Dieter, Director of the Division of Insurance, Department of Labor and Regulation. The South Dakota Division of Insurance reviews rate and form filings from insurance companies, from insurance carriers licensed to operate in South Dakota. If the rate and form filing doesn't follow current statutes, rate rules, or bulletins issued by the division, a filing may be denied by the director. A carrier may appeal this denial through the administrative hearing process, which has been the division's practice. Senate Bill 30 places into statute what is currently in practice with the division. Senate Bill 30 clarifies that the denial of a rate and form filing received by the division as required is reviewable in an administrative hearing under Chapter 1-26. This bill also establishes a time period for which a company may request a hearing. I would ask your support of this bill. However, I do have one additional item to add. This bill is contemplated, has language that includes health carriers as referenced by the 58-11-64 to 58-11-76. This is because this is where the initial questions came from regarding this process. I understand that Mr. Shaw, on behalf of Property and Casualty Insurers Association of America, or PCI, is bringing an amendment today to provide this bill a broader scope, which will include other insurers as well. The division supports this approach and considers Mr. Shaw's amendment on behalf of PCI a friendly amendment and supports the amendment that he will be proposing and be distributing. In conclusion, I'd ask for your support of this bill along with Mr. Shaw's proposed amendment to the bill, and I thank you for your time and will stand by for questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dieter. Questions for Mr. Dieter before he steps away on Senate Bill 30. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 30. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Commerce Committee. My name is Mike Shaw, and I'm a registered lobbyist for Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. PCIAA is a trade group of property casualty companies across the country, and they have the largest market share of several of the coverages in South Dakota. As Director Dieter indicated, Senate Bill 30 is limited to the rate and form filings and the appeals as they would be to just health coverages. PCI supports this clarification, but we would suggest that it be amended to include all lines of coverage, including property and casualty. With the chair's permission, I do have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Shaw, please distribute it.
As the director indicated, really this bill just clarifies that companies do have the right to appeal these rate informed denials. I think current practice, the division has allowed these to go forward, and this Senate Bill 30 is really just a codification of that right. This amendment, it may speak to the amendment.
Mr. Chair. Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 30RA.
Senator Greenfield moves Senate Bill 30, Amendment 30RA, seconded by Senator Lederman. Any discussion, Senator Greenfield? Allow Mr. Shaw to discuss.
Thank you. The amendment deletes the language in line 7 of the bill that in those code sections 581164 to 581176, those restrict this bill to just the health lines coverages. So we're going to delete that language and then in its place insert this chapter, and that will clarify that it would apply to all lines of coverage. Therefore, any line of coverage that had a rate or form denial would have the right to an appeal of that under this provision. With that, we would strongly urge your support of this, and we thank the division for their consideration. And I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Any further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 30? Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 30. Any opponent testimony to Senate Bill 30? With no visible opponent testimony for Senate Bill 30, I'll open up to committee discussion and or questions regarding Senate Bill 30, and the first order of business would be to act on the amendment.
I have a question on the amendment.
Senator Bradford.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, but when you insert this chapter, do we need a chapter number?
My understanding is it refers to the chapter in which the bill is the law will be contained. So I think it's self-evident by its stated in this. This chapter refers to the chapter that it lies within South Dakota codified law.
Oh, I see. Okay. Sorry.
Further questions? The motion is that we pass the amendment Senate Bill 30RA. All in favor will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Senate Bill 30 is amended, Senate Bill 30RA with the amendment. Further action, committee discussion, and or questions on Senate Bill 30 as amended?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to pass.
Second.
Senate Bill 30 moved to do pass as amended by Senator Greenfield, seconded by Senator Lederman. Excuse me. Any further comments?
Nothing profound, Mr. Chairman, but based upon the testimony, I think that this is a good bill, and the amendment makes it better. Thank you.
Senator Lederman, any comments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sutton.
Point of order. The motion was due pass. There was no as amended on
Senator's
motion, but we want it due pass as amended, correct?
That's correct. Senator Greenfield, would you like to modify your motion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know that it's necessary because once it's been amended, that's the bill we're dealing with, but that was the understood, so my motion should read do pass as amended.
Okay. Restated motion by Senator Greenfield that Senate Bill 30 pass as amended with 30RA, seconded by Senator Lederman. Any further discussion? Secretariat, please call the vote.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Senator Hager?
Aye.
Senator Nostrup?
Aye.
Senator Sutton?
Aye.
Senator Lederman?
Aye.
Senator Greenfield?
Aye.
Senator Curd?
Aye. Senate Bill 30 has passed as amended with Senate Bill Amendment 30RA unanimously. Any further action on Senate Bill 30 as amended?
Chair.
Senator Lederman?
Move consent.
Second. Senator Lederman moves consent, seconded by Senator Greenfield. Any further discussion on that, Senator Lederman? Senator Greenfield. All in favor of placing Senate Bill 30 as amended on the consent calendar, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Senate Bill 30 will be placed on the regular Senate calendar.
Let him carry it.
And Senator Bradford, I'd like you to carry that to the floor, if you would, for us, please. Next on our calendar this morning, Senate Bill 58. My agenda slipped off, but I believe it's Senate Bill 58. Mr. Eliason, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Opponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Larry Eliason. I'm Executive Secretary of the South Dakota Commission on Gaming. Senate Bill 58 is an agency bill that was brought at the request of the South Dakota Commission on Gaming to address a couple of situations we've experienced recently and to streamline some of our hearings procedures. Section 1 increases the maximum amount of fines that the commission can impose, and of course those fines could only be imposed after a formal hearing with a right of appeal to the circuit court and eventually to the state supreme court. To understand where this bill comes from, I think it's important to understand what the gaming industry was 25 years ago when these fine limits were set. The bet limits were $5, and a lot of the
Mr.
business...
Mr. Eliason, can yes. I stop you for one second? Yes. Could you ask the folks in the hallway to take their conversation elsewhere? It's somewhat distracting. Or shut the door, one or the other. Thank you. Please proceed.
In 1989, when the current law was passed... of course, the Deadwood landscape was a lot different than it is now. We had a lot of mom and pop operations with slot machines in places like dry cleaners and jewelry stores. that's not the case anymore. Deadwood Gaming is now a billion dollar a year industry, and our intention here is to keep the fines in line with what is. In all practicality, the size of the business. Sections 2 and 3 would streamline different types of hearings that we have. Section 2 would streamline the process of holding hearings on confiscated slot machines. We get about 2 of these a year, and under the state law, they are to be determined as a public nuisance and destroyed after a public hearing. And right now, we have to go through a formal public hearing. Nobody's ever appeared and said, I want my slot machine back, but we do incur legal costs, attorney's fees, and we keep people who've got real business in front of the commission sitting there for half an hour while we go through this. Section 3 also would streamline cases where individuals who have a gaming license and have done something, unfortunately, that's going to require that to be revoked, such as to get a felony conviction. Right now, even if a person comes in to our office and says, I'm going to plead guilty to a third offense DUI, here's my license, we still have to go through the formal hearing. Again, legal costs, attorney's fees, and we're kind of publicly flogging somebody who's already surrendered their license. Section 4 would amend the suspended imposition of sentence statute to say that a person who has received a suspended imposition for a felony could, on their motion, petition the commission to allow them to either be issued the license or to keep the license under certain conditions, which would be opposed by the commission during the probationary period for that felony. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to respond to questions.
Any questions for Mr. Eliason? Senator Greenfield, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eliason, I guess my question goes to the first section of the bill. First of all, how many situations do you deal with or have you dealt with in which you'd be looking... Excuse me. I'm getting choked up. In which you'd be...
It's an emotional subject, Senator, I understand.
In which you'd be looking at imposing a fine in addition to potential revocation or suspension. Obviously, the bill embraces, I'm not going to say more than one subject. I'm not going down that road. It's the same subject, but different topics within. And the amounts, the increase of the amounts is what I'm particularly interested in.
Mr. Chairman... Senator, the intention here is to allow the commission to impose a significant enough monetary penalty that it wouldn't have to fire the second barrel of that double-barrel shotgun and go to a revocation. A revocation or a suspension of a license is probably about the most drastic thing that any regulatory body can do, and particularly in this situation, because if the commission imposes a suspension of the gaming license of a casino because the owner didn't, let's say the owner didn't pay proper taxes, that shuts down the casino for a week, 2 weeks, or 30 days, and it puts dealers and bartenders and waitresses out of business, out of a job, people who didn't have anything to do with the offense. So I think the intention here is to give the commission the authority to impose a heavier fine in lieu of in lieu of having to pull that second trigger, the suspension of a license.
Mr. Chairman, follow up if I might.
Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm reading here, and it says, in addition to revocation or suspension or in lieu of, so it leaves the option of coming with both barrels, so to speak. But, I mean, we're talking about a $100,000 fine currently, and we're looking at going to a quarter of a million on the first subsection. I think, you know, in my mind, $100,000 is significant. I don't know how many millions of dollars a business has to turn in order for them to qualify for that heavy of an imposition of a fine. You know, because you said you want it to be relative to the size of the business and so on and so forth. But I guess when I'm looking at going from $100,000 to $250,000, I think that's hugely significant. On the next line, you're looking at going from $25,000 to $100,000. And on the next line, you're looking at $12,500 to $25,000. I mean, these are significant changes. Obviously, the bill goes on from there. But if I could go back, how many of these disciplinary situations do you deal with on average in a year?
Of the most egregious ones, I would say, fortunately, we've only had one in my memory where the commission felt that they needed to revoke the license. And I think that had they been able to impose a $100,000 fine on the operator, they would not have done that. To keep the $250,000 in context, that's for a license, that's for a slot machine operator. A slot machine is $25,000. So they don't have to sell very many slot machines to recover the $250,000. But just to keep it in perspective. Did that answer your question?
Fairly well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Lyason, any further questions for Mr. Lyason? Senator Hager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if there are any bordering states or similar population states, perhaps similar laws that would have fees like this, whether the $100,000 fee or $250,000?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I did some research on that before we drafted the bill. One of the places that I called was Iowa. I asked them what their suspension limits were. My counterpart down there said that they like us, have two separate chapters, one for racing and one for casinos. His exact words were, we don't have a limit on the casinos. We learned from our mistake when we capped the fines on the racetracks.
So I have a question. Is it an open-ended fine? Could be whatever they decide?
Apparently so.
Wow. Senator Lederman, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to clarify, so all of the amounts that are listed that were changing or proposed to change, 1989 was the year that they were last visited. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, more specifically to the senator's question, they were established in 1989 and haven't been visited at all since until today.
Thank you.
I have a question. Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the last page, you've added, however, the commission can grant a conditional license. I know that's added, but I wondered why that's put in now. It wasn't there before.
Well, again, this chapter or that particular section doesn't appear in the gaming code. It appears in the in the criminal code under the suspended imposition of sentences. There was a situation that happened three governors ago, where a person had a suspended imposition and got a gaming license, much to the chagrin of the person who then occupied the office on the second floor. And so 23A 2714.2, as it now appears, was adopted at that time. I think since then, and particularly last year, with this criminal justice reform, I think that there's been a philosophical change on the part of a lot of people from lock them up and throw away the key to rehabilitation and attempting to keep people employed and as productive citizens if we can. That's the reason for the change.
Senator Barrett? I have a couple questions for you. With respect to the fines, since 1989, during your tenure, how many times, to your knowledge, has the maximum fine been imposed by an operator or anyone else that could be fined?
On the operator, just the maximum, to my knowledge, was only one time. Our philosophy, and I speak for the commission as well as for myself, is we try to get compliance. We don't try to get the money. Frankly, if I can, I'll suspend a lot of the fine on the condition of no like violation of that rule for a year. I found that to be successful. Sometimes you just have to get people to write a check with a bunch of zeros on it to get their attention, or at least the possibility that they're going to have to come back with a check with some zeros on it.
Further questions for Mr. Elias and Senator Greenfield?
One more question. If you look at sub 1 in section 1, I believe... Are we missing a word? I don't know. If the licensee is a slot manufacturer, I'm sorry, a slot machine manufacturer or distributor, is that how that should read?
I don't have my original code. I'm just going off the.
Yeah, that's how it reads in original code too. But it just seems to me that we're probably missing a word.
I guess I wouldn't argue with that. I'm just saying we just
Let's
picked it off the code.
Open right. line of right. dialogue on
right.
that.
Right. No, I caught. I understand your comment.
Maybe it's and or manufacturer and or distributor. We'll have to research that slightly. Perhaps we could bring in an amendment to clarify that if we felt it was necessary at some point.
I believe in the. I don't have my chapter 42.7 for the definitions. I know slot machine manufacturers distributed or manufacturers defined. I don't know if a distributor is defined separately.
We can talk about it later.
There are two. Some manufacturers make machines and others distribute them. They're sort of a like a used car dealer. They're not as opposed to a new car dealer.
Further committee questions for Mr. Eliason. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 58. Any opponent testimony, Senate Bill 58? Seeing no opponent testimony for Senate Bill 58, I'd open it up for committee discussion, questions, and or additional action. Senate Bill 58. Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to pass.
Second.
Senate Bill 58 moved to pass with a question about the language in subsection 1 that we'll fix, and seconded by Senator Bradford. Comments on your motion, Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate Mr. Elias and his ability to address the questions that I asked and so on and so forth. I think that there are issues contained within this bill that certainly need immediate attention, and I'm going to go ahead and give my vote of support to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Greenfield. Senator Bradford, comments? Okay. Motion by Senator Greenfield do pass, and seconded by Senator Bradford. Ask the Secretary to please call the vote.
Senator Lederman?
Aye.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Senator Sutton?
Aye.
Senator Hager?
Aye.
Senator Nostrup?
Aye.
Senator Greenfield?
Aye.
Senator Chakird?
Aye. Senate Bill 58 has passed unanimously. Any further action on Senate Bill 58? There being no further comments or action on Senate Bill 58, I think it's important for the discussion to occur on the Senate floor regarding the fine increases, as pointed out by Senator Greenfield, and it also give us an opportunity to amend that language if necessary. Any other comments or questions, concerns that for the Senate Commerce Committee this morning by members of the committee? We next meet on Thursday, the 22nd of January, 2015, 10 a.m., same building. With that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn until Thursday. Senator Greenfield and then Senator Sutton, motion to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Senate Commerce is adjourned.